G'day, leaders. We had to overcome some perfectionism to get this podcast to you. We've been trying some video and it didn't work, and we had to give ourselves a big kick up the bum to get another podcast out, because as you'll hear in this podcast, we've been aiming for perfectionism, which has been a silly thing. So we're going to share with you some strategies on overcoming perfectionism while we do it, and hopefully learn some stuff along the way. Enjoy.
Why did it count backwards? I know that we're now recording.
What? Hello, Captain.
What are
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Oh, my.
What are we
going
to talk about?
I don't know. So, leadership, life, and everything else.
Yeah.
And we're live, finally.
Finally. It's been a while.
What's been holding us back?
Ah, perfectionism.
Oh, my goodness. We teach this, and yet we got caught up in it.
I know. We've been told for over a year to get video happening for our podcasts.
Yeah.
And so we thought, we'll do it.
Yep. So we downloaded AI apps and
recording, new
equipment and tripods and... And we had a few goes at it, but because it wasn't...
We've had many goes at it.
But because it wasn't to the level that we wanted, we... we'll do it again. Yes, and so hence the big delay in episodes.
I know.
So we've decided to come back to audio.
To let you know what's happening.
And then in the background work on figuring out how to use some of these apps. Like, I've got a background in IT. I started before Microsoft Windows was released. I've been doing this technology stuff for a long time. But yet some of the apps that I'm downloading at the moment, you have to watch. Obviously, they put out these videos. But the videos make it look too simple, because when you go to the app and you go, hold on a second, it didn't refer to that particular setting, or it doesn't even tell you what that setting is. And unless you've got a background in videography or whatever it is that is required, so we're finding it quite difficult, aren't we? And look at us throwing out all the all the excuses.
I know.
We could have just filmed it with our phones and used a really poor sound and thrown it out there, but because we watch a lot of podcasts online and listen to a lot of podcasts.
We want it to be perfect.
Yeah, we want it to be like all of those brilliant podcasts out there who have, you know, five sound engineers, five videographers. And
we may need to get some professionals in, but we thought we could do it.
Yeah, we did. So the topic today is what holds you back?
Yes, that perfectionism. Mm. And then it gives you, it's almost like, what's it called? There's a saying where... you're almost, what is it? Like, you're not petrified, but you're paralyzed.
Paralyzed from choice and paralyzed by fear.
By fear.
Well, that's what it is. All procrastination, and we teach this, is all procrastination is based on fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if something's too big, the underlying fear is that it takes up too much of your energy, too much of your...
It's insurmountable.
Yeah. So your biology says, no, choose the easier thing over there, because that one's going to be, you know, much less energy to do it. Or if it's too hard, you fear failure.
Mm.
Yeah. But in the case of perfectionism, what is it that's the fear?
Well, I've been looking at this. Yeah. So we know about the insurmountable, that you break it down into bite-sized pieces. Yeah. You know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time?
Don't eat elephants.
No, that's right. We don't eat elephants or a big eggplant or whatever it is.
Lao Tzu said the longest journey begins with a single step.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we haven't paid attention to that. We're like, no, we're just seeing the end result that we want in our mind.
Yes.
And we want to get there in one step. But... now, what were you saying about the...
fear?
Oh, yeah. So this perfectionism is, I think, I know for myself that I have had a habit of looking at things in a binary sort of situation. So if I hadn't succeeded, how in my mind what success looked like, then I'd failed.
Okay.
Even though I'd succeeded in every other metric, it still hadn't met... my metric for success, so therefore I'd failed.
So which is the problem that a lot of people have. We're all encouraged to set very clear goals, have a very clear vision of what you want to achieve, But that can sometimes stop you from putting things out or moving forward, because if it's not exactly as you had pictured in your mind, you go, no, it wasn't good enough, and you don't move forward. So there's contrary advice out there. So yes, have an idea, but just fail forward fast.
That's it. So when I was at KindyCare, that's what we did. You know, the app that we created, we failed forward fast. And now we were nimble. We were very small. And we
could touch your toes.
Yes, I could. And
sorry, Ben.
Yeah, Ben couldn't. And we also had a very tight budget. So it made you creative. And because you had to become innovative
through necessity.
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't have wads of cash to splash around and to, you know, to get others in to do it. And it does. It makes you very, very creative, innovative, resourceful.
So do you think that the smaller the organization, the more innovative they're going to be, because it's out of necessity, where you don't really have the opportunity to sit down and figure it out and make it perfect before you actually release it or whatever? Do you think that's...
Look, it's a bold statement, but I am heading that way of thinking. I'm thinking like big organizations, great, and they have innovation in their manifesto and they, you know, it's that's right. They believe in innovation. But what I'm coming to see is that smaller companies or smaller businesses or businesses that have that mindset still of they're being small, they're not this global conglomerate. They do take on the fail forward fast and the, like James Dyson, for example. We've spoken about him before. Over 5,100 failed prototypes of the vacuum cleaner. But he has gone back to some of those failures and reworked but come up with other products. So it was never in vain. And the mindset there of that business is that it's not failure as such. Okay, you didn't get the product in that go, but you've learned something.
Yep.
And we've learned with our podcasting that maybe that app or that ad, they were very creative for the AI product that we purchased.
Yep.
Because it made us believe that it was an easy thing.
Easy solution, yeah.
Really, it wasn't.
Just press record and click. It does it all for you. No, it doesn't. Right. There's a lot of work in the background that you don't get told. So we need to heed our own advice. But we're human.
Often.
We're human. Well, I often say this in training that, you know, for example, I come home and I might be stressed and then I think to myself, oh, you idiot, you teach this stuff. And so, yeah, we've got to heed our own advice as to what's holding us back. Now, I'm more guilty than you. And I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because in August this year, your book is going to be released.
Yes.
The publisher has given you the final copy, I believe. No, where are you at? So
no.
You tell me.
So I've got a copy that limited edition. It's only available for people who attend any presentations, any talks or workshops.
So you've got a few keynotes coming up. So, okay, they can access it there.
They can.
But then the final version will be released in
August.
August. How exciting is that?
It is.
Yeah. So that's been 2 years in the making.
Yes. Yeah,
it's extraordinary.
And your book, Guy.
Okay. Well, that's where I was going to, Michelle. So your book was completed in
2 years.
2 years. I've been writing books for 30 years and none published because I hear my own excuses as I tell them. So I'll tell you my excuses, right? So when I was young, I started writing books because I wanted to be an author. I wanted to write books. I wanted to share knowledge. Okay?
You've got a degree in journalism.
Yes, I do have a degree in journalism. So I think I'm fairly good with words, putting them on paper. But my purpose, the reason why I wanted to write books is to share wisdom. So I, when I was younger, described myself as the conduit of others' wisdom. So this is not my wisdom. I read books, I listen to podcasts, I go to seminars, I devour information, I put it into my brain so that I can understand it, and then I share it with other people. That's what I've been doing my whole life, and that's what I love doing.
Well, you link many ideas that people have about potentially one concept,
yep,
and make it one, easy for you to understand.
Yeah.
But two, so ideas that were previous and up and coming ideas and meld those together.
So my brain is a melting pot of wisdom that has been sourced from other places, and I see my job as to distill it into digestible, learnable chunks that people can go off and implement.
You've written 26 of own workshops, and that's your IP.
Yes, it is. So, okay, so I'm an author if you're talking about the workshops that I've authored, but a book that sits in a bookstore, there isn't any at the moment that has Guy Newman on the spine. But there's, okay, these are my reasons, all right? So when I was young, I didn't think I knew enough. All right.
Yes.
And so these books
are
binary
thinking. It's
binary thinking. Yes. I didn't think I knew enough. So I wanted more experience, more knowledge, more time in front of the classroom, learning from them, passing on
read
the wisdom,
more books.
Reading more books, filling my head full of knowledge. And then so I've been writing many books over the years. So I've got a leadership book that's slowly working away in the background. As you know, the one that I'm most passionate about at the moment is True Confidence, or Fidence, taking the con out of confidence. I've got books on resilience. So I've got all these books that I'm slowly writing in the background based on the workshops that we teach. But I've always thought that I don't have enough of the knowledge yet. Or maybe, I thought this the other day, maybe there's a subconscious mindset that says, hold on, you haven't learned everything yet. That there is a destination of knowledge, but listening to my own advice, I have to admit, there is no destination of knowledge. You need to fail forward fast, or in other words, I should take the information I have at the moment and put a book out. And I know my fear, and I've meditated on this for many years, that if I put it out, I can't change it.
Well, yes, you can.
Well, okay, all right. Second edition.
You can. Third edition. Right. Exactly,
but
you can.
That seems like a lot of work.
It's not. I'm very lucky. I have a great publisher.
Yes.
And they have said to
me. They have been amazing, haven't they?
They have. Yeah. And they have said to me, so this version that is coming out, it's actually next week. So it will be available at my talks as of next week. But it's been great because you can kind of get used to it, get a feel for it, read through it, see what does and doesn't work, get some feedback from actual readers, and then, add to it, change it, other things. Yesterday we were at lunch with an aviation great, Richard de Crepney, and he was telling us about his books and his writing journey and how he's got a number of editions, and his first book that he wrote, he wrote in response to QF-32.
Yeah, and then, the famous flight.
That's right.
Where he was the captain.
Yeah, and then he realised after that there was more that needed to be told. So he produced another book.
On resilience.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the sounds of it, he's still going.
That's right. He's got more books.
Man.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. I guess I can have multiple revisions and multiple books, but, there's just this idea in
my
head.
We can come up with many ideas to counter your resistance.
True. And you might need to slap me over the head with a few of them, because with training, I can do a course. So I did a critical thinking course 2 days ago. Well, yesterday.
You gave a critical. Thursday.
Yes,
two days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago. And during that course, I've run it now hundreds, possibly thousands of times. It's different to the first time I ran it. And I love that about training, because every single time I teach it, I learn something either from the students or from the look on their face when I try and explain it in one way. And then I go, oh, that didn't hit. So I'll explain it a different way. Or I'll try the exercise like this. That works. Oh, I'll try the exercise like this. That doesn't work. And so every single day I get to change my workshops. And I love that. I get up out of bed to go and teach the thing that I've maybe taught 10,000 times, depending on which course it is, some more than others, but I know that I can change it, I can adjust it, I can improve it constantly, whereas a book is a fixed thing that sits on the shelf and I can't reach into people's lounge rooms or libraries or wherever they store their books and change the words in there.
I'm going to counter this people read differently.
They do.
The emphasis for a particular reader will be different for everybody.
Based on where they are at that point in their life.
Correct.
Yeah. Have you read a book a second time?
Yes.
Yeah, I've read books 10 times, and each time it's like I'm reading it for the first time.
Yes, because you're at a different stage.
Because I'm at a different stage in my life.
In your learning,
Michelle, you may have unlocked something in me.
There you go.
Where's the typewriter? Do we still use typewriters?
We've got one under
the
stairs.
Did you ever use one?
Yeah, it's one under the stairs.
Yeah, yeah, but you're that two-finger typer. That must have been really slow.
Three. I use my thumb for the space.
My thumb for the space bar.
For the space bar, yeah.
Touch typing, Michelle, I told you.
Or you can just say it. You can transcribe now.
Anyway, let's go back to what holds people back. So, okay. So what's holding me back in that situation is the silly underlying thought that once the book is published that it can't be changed. And so that's silly because, like we just discussed, that you can do multiple revisions. Every time people read it, they're going to read it differently based on where they are in life. And so this is a quick little shout out to everyone who has read a great book in the past. Go back and read it again and watch what happens. You'll have a completely different experience. And no doubt they'll have that experience when your book comes out.
Hopefully.
Oh, they will. Every time I've read it, and I've read it many times now.
It's been edited many times.
Yes. Well, we weren't trying to make it perfect, though.
Well, that was a trap because there was that over-editing initially by us before we actually outsourced and got it edited by professionals.
So, Talia and Sarah.
Sarah, yes.
Wow, we were so lucky to have two fabulous editors. Go through the book.
Well, Talia's at the beginning of her editing career.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Newton-John, I'm just name-dropping there.
Olivia's sister.
She is an industry expert.
Yeah.
And she edited it. And, wow, it's, you know, you see it in a completely different light once it has been done professionally.
And we had to hold ourselves getting it edited and proofread dozens of times, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, but again, your desire for it to be perfect or at least be the best it possibly can be, where does that come from?
Probably psychologically my childhood or something like that.
Well, but I'm sure that there's an element in you, which is in me, that when you're giving something out to the world which reflects you, you want it to be the best version of you possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because ultimately, I will openly admit this, everything that brings fear into the average adult's brain, including me, is the fear of judgment. It is the biggest fear because we don't like being judged. We like being feeling as though we're not admired but respected or valued or that we belong. Yeah. And so anything that I put out there, there is always going to be an underlying fear of judgment. Oh, someone might not like it.
I know, but I have that. And you remind me, seriously, Michelle, just they're not really thinking about you.
Because <It's like, laughs> we are all the centre of our own universe. People think about us a lot less than what we fear.
Yes.
Yeah. But perfectionists out there, how do they fix it? How do we fix perfectionism?
So I'm working through this at the moment, and I think it's got to be almost that you need to break it down into three or four parts, like a metric.
Yeah.
Where you mentioned it before. You know, we have these goals, these ideals, and ideas of what success looks like.
Yeah.
So I think there needs to be some sort of metric where what failure is. So failure is you didn't attempt, you didn't do whatever.
Yeah.
You died, depending on what it is. And then it needs to be, you know, something like average, good, and exceptional. Okay. So the next thing from failure, whatever you've determined failure is actually a pass or success.
Okay.
But then there are variations of what success could be. So you don't. You may not be happy with the, but you actually like with the how it happened or the end result, but it's still success.
Okay, so it's that fail force forward fast sort of mindset.
Yeah.
Okay, so what I suggest with perfectionism is that, and you and I are both experiencing this now. When you're in the middle of it, you can't let go.
No.
So what the secret is that before you start, you determine when you're going to stop.
That's right.
So how long are you going to give yourself and what does it look like when you're going to finish?
Mm.
Yeah. And if what it looks like when you're finished is perfection, then maybe you need to sit there and be more realistic, as you were just saying. So give yourself some different metrics. What is good enough, or what is going to move me forward, or what is going to be my first attempt?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's...
Well, I had colleagues who, you know, the pass mark was 70% in an exam, a theory exam, 70%. And if they got 70%, they were like, that's a job well done. I didn't put too much effort into it. I was, you know, economical with my effort. I've done as required and I can now concentrate on something else. Whereas I was unhappy if I didn't get 100%.
Yeah. Well, so there's a really important aspect to that. If you put in the effort required to get 100% in everything, what are you sacrificing?
Yeah.
So you think about the person who doesn't spend time with their family, their loved ones, their hobbies, their friends, their fitness, because they're aiming for perfection in one area of their life, whilst all the other areas of their life are being sacrificed. And that's something you often see in perfectionists, where they get so narrow focused, so one track, that they ignore all of the other tracks, the other areas of their life. So they suffer. So then they have to pull themselves out of this completed perfect thing, whatever it may be, jump into one of the other tracks and try and fix the lack of attention to it. And
then by giving
everything to that whilst something else suffers, rather than the mindset of, you know, spreading your attention and your energy across all of the areas in your life that are important and being good enough, not perfect in each one. Yeah, we should all be aiming for good enough and maybe perfecting things when we're a heart surgeon or a brow or a neurosurgeon. So if you're a neurosurgeon, please, when you're in there, be perfect. Be perfect. And a shout out to my sister who is just about to have brain surgery for the fourth time.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed that it's successful this time. And when I say success, each one's been successful, but that it doesn't keep recurring as it does, because that would be harrowing for what she's going through. To all thoughts out to a successful outcome there. So unless you're a brain surgeon or a heart doctor or somebody who has my life in their hands, a pilot, please get to perfect, or what is expected as
pilots. You know, there's a off the cuff saying that an aircraft's always going to land. It's whether you can use it again or not is the thing. So the outcome is that you can, like the outcome that you want is that you can use the aircraft again.
Okay, so any landing that you can
walk away from is a good one. Yeah. And any that you can use the aircraft again is a great one.
Yeah. We had a similar thing in the circus. So, and you were just talking about that, aiming for perfection. So you would think in a circus that you want to get things perfect when you're doing a performance. So yes. I was a juggler, as you know, and we had this routine that we did in the juggling. It was a club routine, so we're juggling three clubs each, and there was four of us. And so we had this routine where one person is standing there and the three of us are throwing clubs to them while we're juggling our own, and then we'd move, and then the next person would be throwing the clubs and then move again, and then the next person, and then we'd stand in a square and we'd be juggling to the person opposite us and then to the side of us and then over the top of, and it was this huge routine, and we failed nearly every show. Somebody would drop and we just pick up from where we were. So we'd pick up the clubs and start again and finish the routine and put our hands up, and the audience would clap and go, oh, look at those kids throwing things in the air. But there was one day, I remember this, and it will live with me forever. We're doing the act, and we're used to dropping things. We're used to picking up from where we went. We were always aiming for perfection, and that is to not drop a club. And this one particular show, we're looking at each other going, we're doing it. Nobody's dropped anything. And then I'm thinking to myself, stop thinking like that. And then focus. Catch, throw. And then as we're getting closer to the end you could feel the tension. The band, who were amazing. We always had the best bands in the circus. I could feel their energy going up because they're going, they're going to make it. And then everyone else who's watching, they're going to make it. And the audience doesn't really know. That we've never made it yet. And then we get to the last throw, and I remember like the club coming towards me, I catch it, and then I'm looking at all three of the others going, did they catch it? And they all caught it, and we jumped up in the air and we threw our hands in the air, and like the feeling was elation. So we actually reached perfection.
Yeah.
But that was it was the destination, but we were always happy with putting on a good show and having a round of applause at the end. But yeah, anyway, so perfection, unfortunately, is a bit of an attraction, especially in juggling. You never want to drop anything.
Well, it's like a volley when you're doing, you know, table tennis or tennis. Or, yeah. You know, if you're volleying, it's a long rallying. Rally. Sorry,
because volley, you're hitting it on the full. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So rallying, and it feels good, doesn't it? 20, 30 hits, and you're like, whoa, we're professional.
Oh, so, okay, you're not competing. Because if you're competing, you don't like a long rally. You want to just win that ace. Yeah. So perfectionism's been holding us back, unfortunately, which meant that we still don't have a video podcast where we can cut it up and throw it up onto all the socials and become famous to get more viewers so we can share. Because we have a mission. Well, I have a mission, and I think you've shared yours, is that I think the world will be a better place when we all become our best selves.
Yes.
And so I want to share the wisdom that is on the planet with as many people as possible. It's not my wisdom. I'm just the conduit, and I'd like to share it far and wide. So we've got to forget about being perfect. We've got to get it out there. So even if people are listening to us like audio just now, but in the future we will have video once we've figured out that app.
Yep.
Well, let's make sure that this doesn't hold us back again.
Yeah, that's right. So apologies to everyone out there if you've been waiting for the latest Captain the Clown podcast.
It's here now.
Yes, we have one. And we will continue to move forward with audio.
Yeah, we'll keep doing audio, and we'll practice
work in the background.
Get the video done. If we had a producer and a studio, we could do it.
But someone who knew what they were doing.
Exactly.
Yes.
But our life is quite full.
Yes, which means we should probably hand it over to someone. No, we're holding
like
on.
Because we're learning at the same time as well.
Yeah.
More dogs.
More dogs.
More dogs. We had another chat the other day with somebody about how when you're walking a dog, people talk to you.
Yes.
And we talk to people when they've got dogs.
Exactly.
And how good is it that we walk around this our suburb and the dogs are looking at you and we're looking at them and they're going, oh, pat me. And then the owner's going, yes, he wants a pat or she wants a pat. And we go down and we give him a pat. And then the owner walks away going, thank you for patting my dog. That's funny. All right. And so our sponsors still haven't reached out to us.
No. Well, we've been kind of mute.
We have, yeah. So why would Bollinger reach out? Why would Bose or who was the other sponsor we were asking for?
Lint,
yes. They still haven't reached. We've still got the car wash kid. But anyway, good to finally back on the microphone, Michelle.
Yes.
Yeah, cheers.
Bye. Well, that was fun.
That was fun.
You're such a clown.
The clown.
Lady Captain. Lady.
And who's going to listen to this? Maybe our mums.
Thanks, Mum.